Well, welcome everyone back to the Forrest Stevens Show. I'm just sitting in this motorhome by myself, talking to a microphone about my life. That's what this episode is. I always try to preface my episodes a little bit with what I plan to do in them. Give them some sort of structure, try to hook you in just a touch, because these are wacky, these are weird, and I do go off on random tangents, and you do have to have some patience and some understanding of what this show is, I feel like, to allow yourself to get through the awkward first few minutes, which this is included in. And the beginning of all my podcasts are probably the worst part. I mean, they get better and better as you listen to them, but it's probably hard for a lot of people to get past this point right now, because I'm deliberating even on this, even me just saying this. I feel like I'm saying a lot of words and spending a lot of time. Feels slightly redundant, but it's like in movies when they hold the shot longer than they need to, and that actually conveys something, because it allows the viewer to think deeper on what this scene means. Or they look deeper at the actual visual part of it that they're seeing as well. Already I forgot what I was wanting to talk about in this podcast, and that's okay. But I think it might have been Risk. I wanted to talk about Risk, not the board game, but the type of behavior, and more generally, what Risk is for an individual. It's very interesting. Our lives are very frail, and actually very few care about our lives as individuals. You care the most about your life, hopefully. You know, not everybody cares that much about their life. There is a lot of suicides in this world. There is a lot of self-loathing. There is a lot of self-hatred. There is a lot of just depression. And all of those, in all of those, is a lack of care for oneself. But there are, even the, you know, there's a handful of people around you, probably, that care to some degree about what your life is like. Now, how does that relate to Risk? The connection is getting severed as I try to explain this, because it's a new concept for me in my brain, and I'm trying to just bridge the gap between my neural pathways, a new thought I'm trying to create here, one that I haven't had before, a place that I haven't explored in my brain's ability. But there's something here with Risk that I want to talk on, and I'm trying to get there. We live in a world that rewards the proper amount of risk. If we are too physically risky, we allow ourselves to be injured or die from the physical risky behavior that we are in. But there's also a lot of people, and I include myself in this, that don't take enough risk in their life. And it comes from a place of fear. I've always had problems expressing how I actually feel to others. I have to get to know somebody pretty well. I have to trust them pretty well to actually be myself around them. So what does that mean? It means it's very hard for me to make new friends, because I become very uncomfortable. I get very uncomfortable trying to talk to somebody new. I've gotten way better in my life. You know, I used to be much worse. But what this stems from is a fear of risk. You know, there's a risk in me behaving a certain way that will put me into a situation that is not something that I would want to be in. We don't know the outcome of our actions. Today, I went and filmed a video, a tour video for my different media channel, and an interview. And I'm putting together this documentary about this woman who lives in a motorhome and travels around and decided to sell her house and farm and live in this motorhome. As I was arriving there, I was just thinking, wow, do I ever not want to do this? I don't want to knock on this door. I don't want to get to know this person. I don't want to have an uncomfortable situation. I just want to be back in my motorhome, laying around, smoking some weed, maybe doing one of these podcasts even, or having a bite to eat, or just like, yeah, like watching a show. I do this thing. I watch way too much TV. Ends up being a big waste of time. I waste a lot of my time doing that. And I get really sucked into worlds that TV can create. And I get sucked into the stories of it. And it affects my life, actually. It affects what I like and how I behave. So it can, you know, depending on the show that I'm watching, it can be kind of negative for me in my behavior. But the bigger thing that it affects is my thoughts, because, you know, it enters my thought, it enters my mind, you know, not just the stories, but the underlying world that it has created. You know, I very much like shows that tell stories of individuals and of lives and create an interesting world that can be explored beyond the show's dimension. So that's just, yeah, that's one thing that's a problem for me, but it's one thing that I feel very, it like makes me feel very comfortable just watching a show and just chilling, you know. Obviously I can become restless at a point, but I have a very high tolerance, because this has been a problem for me, just watching too much TV. I'm sure there's others out there who could relate to that. But it's been damaging because, like I said, it's a waste of time. And it's also not only just a waste of time, but because I become so engrossed in the world that it creates, it takes me away from the world that I'm actually in. Even if that world is me making food and me hanging out with my wife, you know, these are things that are very important because that is my life. You know, my life is not actually that show that I'm watching. The life is everything else that goes around that. That show that I'm watching, that's fantasy. That is something that not only, like, it's not real, for one, a scripted show. I'm not obsessed with the world of the set that these actors acted in. I become obsessed with the idea of the world that these people have created. None of it's real. But it's based on reality. I mean, everything's it's based on something that I find interesting. So yeah, I get really, sucked into that. It makes me avoid risk. So another point there, back to the risk. And I just feel, yeah, it's like, I'd rather be like tucked away, not doing anything, not in uncomfortable situations, not putting myself out there, not getting rejected. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to, is like a feeling of like nervousness because I feel like somebody's going to reject me in some way. And what is rejection but just not getting what you want? So when you risk something, if you have an expectation of a reward from that risk, the reward can affect the way you feel about the action itself. It can affect it in a lot of ways. So, and the reward, you know, like it's very interesting. It's like the juice kind of needs to be worth the squeeze. I want, see, that's the other thing too, is like, I want to talk to people. Like I went to film this video and it's like, I got to talk to somebody and get to know them a little bit. And have an experience. I want to have experiences. I want to meet strangers. I want to make friends. But it's like, I'm also I'm realizing like I'm not doing that because I want to meet that person. I don't care that this person lives in a motorhome, really. I think that it will do well on my YouTube channel and make me money. And that's kind of like a perspective thing. It's like when I first started doing this, I did care about what I thought it was amazing that people were doing all these different things. And I haven't done a video in a long time where I've really felt like this is amazing what this person is doing. There's been some, but definitely my perception of it and my feeling towards making these types of documentaries that I've been making for 6-7 years, whatever the fuck, however long, like 160 of them that I've made. I've made like 160 documentaries. Like, it's crazy. I think throughout having done that so much, throughout this process, throughout the and where my life is now, I'm less interested in that subject. I think it's just, I literally think it's that. Like, it's, and which is like completely and totally fair, I would think, you know? And where risk comes in again for me is in my personal life. It's like, how long can I do that for? How long can I do something that I don't care about? Not very long. And I think that part of me and parts of my business I have done for a while without actually caring about. So it's been longer than I think that I could, you know? And that's because there's been times where it's been rewarding. It's been surprising as well. You know, I go and film with somebody, I meet them, and it ends up being very interesting. And I actually am interested in them. You know, even actually like a couple episodes ago, I filmed a documentary. Yeah, a couple weeks ago with a guy who lives in a truck camper. And yeah, it was uncomfortable, but I wasn't like, I didn't have that feeling of like, oh, this, like, I really don't want to do this. But also he actually seemed to be a very interesting person. And I actually was interested in what he was doing and who he was. So maybe it was just today, you know, like to some degree. But I think underlying all of this is a real want and a real need, actually, for me to take a risk by not doing what is safe, right? The opposite of risky is safety. safety. I don't know, but maybe those don't... those aren't good opposites of each other, but there is like, you know, I go to these, I film these documentaries because they're relatively safe. Although I do think there's less juice from the squeeze, if that's the saying, you know, like I am getting, less reward for my risk. And I'm also risking less than, you know, I could be. But I've also realized, like, I did this thing where I thought it was the best idea for me to make my media channel, my documentary channel, a media channel, and make it not personal, not make it my own thing. And in some ways, that's allowed me to have success for a long time. But I think now it's actually a negative because... basically, the types of documentaries I do have become commoditized, and there are much bigger players who are doing the whole algorithm, lots of posts. They're just doing it better than I am. And they've basically captured that share of the market more than I have. That's always been the case. There's always been bigger players than me in this field. I've kind of been medium, middle of the road, kind of. But the gap has gotten way bigger, and the share of the pie that my channel receives as far as eyeballs is less. So that's also like making me also not want to do it as much. Like, if maybe if I was being rewarded more for it, I would just be like totally happy to do it because it would be worth so much. But it's very infrequent that I'll have a video do well and actually make the money back that it costs to make it. There's a lot of costs to going and spending my time and days and hiring an editor or hiring someone else to film them like I do as well. Like those costs are more easily calculated, even the filming or like hiring a filmmaker and then hiring the editor. And I just see, you know, I see in the analytics, okay, well, that video did not make its money back. So is this sustainable? And, you know, I always kind of knew that it would be the ones that do really well that more than pay for the other ones. And that's how the business would operate. Not every single video needs to be a winner for it to make sense to pay people and for myself to go out and film these and edit these. Like to pay myself. But that is becoming harder and harder and tighter and tighter. So this business, I think for me, I think there's been a couple missteps. I think the big one was, and I'm not sure I could have done it. And, you know, it's hard to go back in the past, but it's a possible misstep of me going away from the personal branding into the conglomerate or like the umbrella of different media and hiring out a lot of the work. Maybe that was a problem, but I think that, you know, what I realized back in the day was when it was a personal channel and I, you know, it was under my name and it was me doing the things there, you know, it built a good following. But anytime I strayed from that type of content and did personal things, like, you know, that's why I have two channels. And this Forrest Stevens channel has become where I post this podcast because this is personal to me. This is who I am. This is what I'm showing. And whenever I posted that kind of stuff or anything else than the alternative dwelling documentaries on my YouTube channel, it kind of tanked the views of my entire channel because people would be interested in my channel for the alternative dwelling, and then I would post something completely different that is also about what I'm doing in my life, and people would be like, oh, this isn't what I'm interested in. I'm not going to watch this channel and this video, and then YouTube wouldn't recommend the next tour to them. So, I did the Van Life and Chill podcast on that channel, different media, and I did that every week. And I did the alternative dwellings every week or as much as I could. It was very difficult at that time to find people to do them with. And I noticed my views just went way down when I started posting more, but it was different content. So people were like, oh, okay, this isn't what I wanted from this channel. So I don't think I'm able to provide this. Like the other thing too is like van life and tiny house living. Yes, there's tons of people out there doing it, but most of them now I find are not in it for any sort of attention reasons. They're in it because that's actually what they enjoy doing, and they don't really care to show that off. A large part of my van life tour interview career has been during this Instagram, TikTok influencer boom of van life. And I think that has totally peaked. I would be very surprised. Like, yeah, there's going to be little blips or whatever, but you know, the golden era of van life Instagram is over, in my opinion. And I thought that in 2018, and I was wrong. You know, I tried to predict the top. I was wrong. It peaked. When did it peak? I don't know. It peaked when that girl and her snake were like number one trending on YouTube. And then there was a few other things around there. Some like actual celebrities getting vans and shit like that, or other YouTubers making like famous YouTubers making van life stuff. And there was like a year there. It might have been like 2021, 2020 maybe. It was a couple of years ago, but not that long ago. That was the peak. So that's interesting to me. You know, I think I've worked on my documentary skills a lot. I think I'm way beyond making these types of documentaries anyway. And I need to do something bigger with if I'm going to do documentaries. The main concern for me and the reason that I think this is a risk at all, or that I'm talking about risk and talking about this is the way that I make my money. So if I'm going to do something else, I'm risking my financial safety to do that. Now, our house did sell. We do have some money, but the last thing that I want to do is squander that money and have to just continually dip into that as I try to figure out how to make money in some other way. Now, I might not be able, like, even though that I hate that and I don't want to do that, that might be something that I have to do. Because, well, I'm making less money through different media anyway, but it's, there's going to be this transitional period and there's going to probably be a slowdown in videos. Like, I'm surprised that I've been able to do it once a week for as long as I've actually been able to do it. It's, yeah, pretty crazy. Like, I've missed like probably 2 weeks, two or maybe three sporadically, but I've been doing this for a long time. Which, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's wild to me. I'm talking about this recent year and a half, maybe, before that there were huge gaps because of, COVID and inability to go and film. And, you know, I tried then too. I tried to transition away from that. I tried the Van Life Chill podcast. I tried homesteading vlogs. I tried a podcast, tried a Patreon. I still have one Patreon member. I think the most I topped out at was like 12, maybe 13. It's like, I really appreciate those 12 or 13. It's a beautiful thing that they did to have given me money and supported my goals at the time. But obviously 12 people are not enough to support you on Patreon to make it viable financial living from that. So it's like, okay, am I going to try this again? Am I going to like switch lanes into something completely different? Like, I just feel at this crossroads in my life where I just think that making media might not even be what I want to do anymore. And it's such an interesting thing because it's something that I've been doing for so long now. Something I've been doing for like 8 years. You know, before this, the longest job I ever had was 9 months. I was making dough in a pizzeria, in an Italian pizzeria. And I had a job for 6 months once, and I had a job for 3 months, 1 month, all these shitty jobs, and I never held them. I always left, and I always just did things. I went traveling. I just basically went traveling every time I would quit. And then I would come home and, you know, occasionally, I guess a couple times I switched jobs as well. Didn't always quit to go travel. Sometimes I quit to switch. And then the last time I quit, I just quit to do YouTube full time. And that was, yeah, I guess like 7 years ago now, which is a long ass time. I've been doing this for 7 years. And I've never had a job in the midterm. I mean, I did some freelance work. And all of that was terrible. I mean, that is just not what I want to do. Now there's this possible kind of consulting job for a documentary that's kind of looming in the horizon. But I don't know. I don't know if that'll even happen. That's the thing about these, that's the thing about media that's so crazy, is when you do it at large scales, there's so many moving parts that like 80% of things don't get made. Like they don't get made. They get stopped at some point. And it's just all that energy. It's like Sisyphus. It's like you're just pushing up this boulder and it's rolling down before you're actually getting it to the top, and you got to push that boulder again. And each attempt at a new creative project, you're just hoping that you make it to the top of that mountain with that boulder, that project, that big piece of shit you're rolling up there. And yeah, there's always something. But not always. I mean, I've done a lot of projects in my day, and I'm proud of them all. And this is another one that I'm proud of, is this podcast. Because it feels like a risk to me as well. You know, I never, like right now, I literally didn't have anything really that I wanted to talk about. Definitely no ideas fleshed out, like a concept in my mind of something of, like, literally I just had a question in my mind of like risk. How does risk affect us? Like, and how does risk affect me? And that's all I had to start this podcast. So before I started this podcast, I was just thinking, I don't have anything to talk about. What if, like, I'm just like wasting my time, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I waste way more time stuck in thought if something's a good idea or not, instead of just trying it. And that's because it feels uncomfortable trying something, because the beginning of when you try something, you don't know what you're doing. I didn't know how to have this, to explore this topic, until I began exploring it. I didn't have a roadmap of what I was going to say. I don't have a teleprompter. I'm just talking as fast as I can think. Not quite. In those little pauses right there, I was thinking about where to go next. So the thought and the thinking does happen at the same time, but then there's also thinking that happens when there isn't talking. Yeah, it's just immediately when I stop talking, I start thinking about something. So I kind of, you know, I definitely explored, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I remember here, that I explored risk and how it's affecting me in my personal life. And I explored a little bit at the beginning of how risk can be tied into the world at large a little bit. We are rewarded. I did talk about this, but I'm just going to kind of try to get through more of it, because I think I got hung up on parts of it. Risk is rewarded. Certain amount of risk is rewarded. A certain amount of risk is also punished in a way. It can just be punished by the laws of reality or the laws of society. If you do something too physically risky, you the laws of reality will punish you physically, emotionally, mentally. If you do something too risky, society might punish you. That thing that you do might be so risky that it's deemed outlawed, and you are actually breaking a law, and you face the consequences of that. Or there might be people willing to be taking advantage of your risk. If your risk tolerance is so high that you begin gambling your money, there's somebody that will say, yeah, you can play that game, that I'll make a game where you can win money, and but I'll charge you a little fee to do that. I'll charge you like a little entrance fee in the form of you winning $1 for, me basically taking one of your dollars from the 10 that you've put in on average, or whatever it is. It's probably even higher than that. It's probably like they take a dollar out of every $4 that's invested in like lottery tickets and, you know, casinos and all that. So it's, maybe if it's even more, I don't know. But, I mean, obviously people do win that in those circumstances. So, but it's like you're winning a pool of other people's money that they've lost, and the house is just taking a percentage of that. I don't know what the percentage of. I'm actually very curious about casinos. On this trip that I went to, I stayed at a casino, and it was the weirdest fucking experience of my life. I think I talked about it on an episode. I'm not entirely sure, but I was like, I want to make a documentary about casinos and gambling. But it would be very hard to get the access that I would need to really explore it. But like, for instance, this casino, it was almost like they designed it, and I've heard of this, like designing the casino in a way so that it's difficult to get out, and you're enticed to stay in. And they do that with like grocery stores and shit like that too. But it wasn't that. It was the hotel that was attached to it was architecturally built in such a way that it was the most inconvenient and so hard. It was so easy to get lost in, and none of the numbers made sense. Like it was so confusing. And it wasn't just me, it was all these other people that I were with were like, I don't even know why my room's here and this number's there and this is there. And you had to walk super far through all of these hotel hallways. And that place was fucked. And then it was like the people running it, I got to know. And they basically like they, you know, they're running like a gambling casino, which in a sense is like this. It's almost like people that win from casinos, they're basically like, people say it's like, oh, it's you're winning the lottery or something, but it's like you're kind of winning a loan that then you pay back because you're a gambler. You're not gonna win unless you're a gambler, and if you're a gambler, you're gonna net lose. Nobody just goes into a casino, nobody just buys one scratch ticket and wins $1 million. It's somebody who is doing that, and have, if they made $1 million, they've invested, you know, 200,000 over their life. And then they win that million, and guess what they spend that million on? Of course, they'll buy a car, you know, whatever. They might give somebody some money, but a lot of that is going directly back into the gambling. So it's kind of like a loan in a way. But anyway, these people that ran this casino, they ran a casino, and then they also did predatory loans to people as their second business. And I was just like, what the fuck is this place? Like, this is the most interesting shit I've ever, like, heard. These people are just living an insane life. And it would be so interesting to explore. And, like, I was thinking about the cinematography of it, like walking down these halls and like just being so confusing and like showcasing how confusing it is and having somebody like not know where they're supposed to go because none of it makes sense. And then the characters in the casino, you know, it's like, it's a cliche, but like, why is somebody's grandmother who is hooked up to oxygen sitting in front of a slot machine just pressing the button as fast as she can? Why? Who is that person? Why is that person doing that? That person has had a fucked life if they're doing that, in my opinion. Gambling is the most insane thing in my eyes. Like, and yeah, it's a topic that could be really explored. I've never seen, maybe there's, I'm sure there's documentaries about everything, but I think a documentary about gambling would be very interesting and very eye-opening to a lot of people who have never really thought about it. But it's something that we have in our life that is super prevalent in our life. And it's like even the stock market can be a form of gambling, and it can be almost a form of loan too. It's like, I'm loaning my money to this pool, and I'm owning a share of this, and I'm endorsing this company, and I hope that this pool builds, and basically my loan builds over time for me to be able to withdraw it plus interest. Now, the company's not paying that, but the collective, the casino, the whole house is paying that. And you know, the real winners are the companies that issue ETFs. I mean, they have it made in that way, because they win no matter what. They're winning that 1% just for setting up the place to play the game, the 1% management fee. Or, well, I mean, with with mutual funds, it's much more than that. But you're paying a gambler, basically. a gambler who is using math to figure out something that is not solvable with math. the stock market has too many moving parts. I listened to this podcast that was so interesting, and he said something that really was poignant to me that I'd never thought about. But there's all these basically forms of math, whether we use numbers or not. Maybe it can be lines and charts and all this as well. But we use math to solve the problem of what a stock is and what it might be worth. But when we use math on paper, like when you do addition, subtraction, whatever, algebra even, those variables aren't changing. Those numbers in there aren't changing. If you're trying to plus 2 plus 2, it doesn't all of a sudden become 2 plus 5 and you haven't become aware of it. And that number, that 5, isn't switching to a 6, isn't switching to a 1, isn't switching to a 20. It's not doing that constantly. And meanwhile, you're writing down 4 because you thought the equation was 2 plus 2. Now, that's basically how the stock market works. There's so much going on. It's so complex. It's actually a bunch of buy and sell orders of people with different ideas of things. They're in different investing time frames, different investing strategies. And it's just, it's too complicated to figure out with math. And that was an interesting thing, to realize. But anyway, I digress, because that's this podcast. That's what this podcast should be called. I digress. I've really enjoyed this. I was hesitant to do this podcast because I have this concept in my head and I have this sort of strain and pressure. That this is another thing that I was talking about, where it's like, if I stop doing these alternative dwelling documentaries, what I'd really like is for something like this podcast to be making money. And then I was thinking, okay, well, how does this podcast make money? Well, it doesn't make money from ads. It makes money occasionally, and it could in the future make money by selling my book, because I earn, you know, $3-$4 each book sale. And it's something that can continue the building of this entire thing as a business. It's a product I can sell. Yeah, sure, I could sell affiliate links for Mint Mobile and get $75 each time somebody signs up. Or I could, you know, anyone needing rural internet in Canada, if you sign up with what's it called? Maple Wi-Fi. This is actually great for van people, but I get $19 a month until that person cancels. So that one's pretty nice. Just wish I could, you know, find the listeners that need that, because that is dope. Maybe I should do like targeted Facebook ads and do some like arbitrage ad sales for affiliate link bullshit. Who cares? Yeah, so that was putting pressure, because the risk was feeling more, right? When the risk feels higher and heightened, that applies pressure. And sometimes that can be good and sometimes that can be bad. It's like you want the right amount of pressure for you as an individual. A lot of our lives are under-pressured. A lot of our lives are over-pressured. And that's not good. Neither of those are good. We need the right amount of pressure. We don't always know what that is. But usually, it's more pressure than we think it is. That's what I've found, personally, at least. A little more pressure than we need. A little, make you sweat just a little, you know, so that you're working and that you feel rewarded. And that's it too, right? It's not actually the pressure that needs to be heightened. It's the risk that needs to be heightened. And therefore, the pressure gets heightened. But with higher risk should come higher reward. So to me, it's like, you know, it's a risk, me doing less of these alternative dwelling tours, if that's what I decide to do. And then it's like, oh, I could, you know, maybe I need to focus, I need to put more pressure on this podcast. So my idea was to like, just go page by page through my book and do one episode per page and expand on the thought provoking thing that page has on it. That's my book, by the way, if you're a new listener, is basically it's jumping off points for you to begin to think about. It's new thoughts that I had that can be expanded greatly on. And in, you know, I've done this in the past. I've done podcast episodes where I do that. I flip randomly to those pages and I talk and expand on that idea that I had, that I wrote. And I was thinking, okay, well, I should just do that page by page. And then I would have like 150 pages or 150 podcasts or whatever, or close to it. There's a few blank pages at the end of the book to fill in. So it's like 140 something episodes. And it's like, okay, well, that's like 3 years worth of weekly episodes. And then it's like, well, I'd have that all backed. And then I like wouldn't have the pressure, because I've been feeling the pressure of this podcast of like not having enough content to release. And it like catching up to me, like booking, like, you know, doing some guest episodes or just like kind of banking a couple podcasts. And then it's like, oh shit, well, 2 weeks just went up and I'm back to like having one podcast left or zero podcasts for this week. And it's just, it becomes a little stressful on top of the weekly alternative dwelling tour that I do. It all becomes a little too much. And I think I'm exhausted, guys. I think that's a big part of it. I think I'm exhausted. And, yeah, I think it's just like I need a little less pressure and I need a little more fun in my life. So instead of doing that right now, which is what I thought I was going to do, which is just start page one, start doing my book, I can do that another day. And instead, I just recorded this podcast, no microphone, having fun, trying to think a new thought. And if you enjoyed it, that's great. Leave a review, a comment. Tell me what this sparked in your mind, you know. And the other thing too, I love doing guest podcasts. Like I love having guests on my podcast and talking to them and getting to know somebody and having that uncomfortable feeling and not wanting to do it, but then actually getting to talk to somebody and learn something new. But I literally do not know who to have on my podcast. So if there's anyone that you think I should have on my podcast, please comment that. Please tell me, reach out, send me a DM, send me the person's socials, anything. I really appreciate that because, I never know who to talk to. I never knew who to reach out to, who to try to get as podcast guests on my show. And I've kind of tried it, like a couple of my guest episodes came from just like posting on like a Facebook group. And it's just like, I don't know, these people, like they kind of had something more they wanted to promote, or at least a couple of them did. A couple of them actually turned it out to be pretty good, I thought. But a couple of them just like kind of really just wanted to have something to promote. And I guess that's fine. You know, they're basically doing like a podcast circuit to promote something, but just wasn't, I didn't really have enough, there wasn't enough juice for the squeeze. So, I'd love to talk to some interesting people though that, just want to chat, even if it's you. Maybe it's you, maybe you're a listener and you think that we could have a good conversation. Reach out. That'd be cool. All right. That's it. Thanks everyone for listening. I really appreciate it. I was going to say thanks for watching, but if you're on YouTube, you're listening to this. Otherwise, you're just looking at my face with the Forrest Stevens Show over top of it, because you're looking at a logo for my podcast. Goodbye, everyone. Listen to the backlog, too. That's huge. If you enjoyed this, go listen to the old episodes. They're evergreen. Thanks. Bye.